Call this meeting to order. Oh, sorry, I'm having a little iPad trouble here. One second.
Hello?
Mr. for anybody on the call, you can put yourselves on mute and you'll be called as soon as we're ready. Mr. Bohol, would you like to move forward with the roll call?
Yes, I can do that. Dr. Rosenberg.
Here. Good morning.
Perfect. Thank you. Dr. Cunningham is absent. Ms. Pichelle.
Here.
Dr. Walker.
Present.
Mr. Goodman.
Present.
Dr. Chipon.
Present.
Dr. Matum.
Present.
Perfect.
Thank you. We're full board except for one. That's perfect. If I can take a moment to review the mission of the board. The mission of the board is to protect the public by setting educational and training standards for licensure and by reviewing complaints made against osteopathic physicians, interns, and residents to ensure that their contact meets the standards of the profession as defined by law, ARS 32-1854. Perfect. Would you like to move on with the roll call? I'm sorry, the call to the public. Do we have anybody from the public who wishes to speak?
We have no one signed in to speak. And I did want to note that while we normally have students, the students are on vacation for the summer holidays, and so we will have no students today.
Perfect. Okay, I won't read that then. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I assume we can move on to item number four next.
That's correct.
Great. If anybody has a motion or any corrections for our March 28, 2026 open session and March 28, 2026 executive session, please say so. For the meeting minutes, was everybody present who's currently on, or was that Dr. Walker? You were here, right?
Correct.
Perfect. Okay.
Yep.
If no amendments, I'll take a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve.
Thank you, Dr. Walker. Do I have a second?
Second, Ms. Pichelle.
Thank you, Ms. Pichelle. I know who you are. I'm even good at your name now. Ish.
Yes, you are.
Ish. I appreciate that. Is there any further discussion on March 28 open and executive session? I'm taking them together unless anybody has a problem with that. If not, are there any opposed? And if not, all in favor, please indicate with an aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Motion passes unanimously. Mr. Bohol, I assume we want to move on to item five next.
That would be great. And I can provide the summary.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I believe Dr. Bence is signed in to speak as well as her attorney.
Perfect.
Thank you. Okay. Would we like to have Dr. Bence sworn in for the record?
Yes, please. That would be fantastic.
Dr. Bence, will you please raise your right hand? Do you swear under penalty of perjury to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
Okay. Summary of the case. Dr. Bence has been licensed in Arizona since 1994. Dr. Bence graduated from the Texas College of Osteopathic Medicine in Fort Worth, Texas in 1991. She completed an internship at Dallas Family Hospital in 1992. The complainant alleges Dr. Bence made unfounded claims on radio advertisements and on her website. The complainant alleges the radio advertisements in Oklahoma claim her non-FDA-approved proprietary molecule used with semaglutide will help with weight loss without any side effects. The complainant also alleged the website claims for Dr. Bence uses FDA-approved semaglutide when they actually use a non-FDA-approved compounded semaglutide. The complainant states she is also using a deceptive practice stating that the compound is from an FDA-approved manufacturing facility, which creates the impression that the FDA is also having oversight of her particular compounded concoction. It appears Dr. Bence may have fallen below the standard of care and that the radio advertisements from Oklahoma do claim the medication used by Red Mountain Weight Loss does not have the common side effects associated with semaglutide, nausea, and abdominal pain. The advertisement states that semaglutide is FDA approved. The advertisement does not state the medication prescribed, Revolex, is FDA approved, but it may be implied. Staff recommends an investigative hearing, and I do have the updated radio transcripts for the advertisement, if the board would like to hear that.
Thank you. Would be so kind.
Yep. New text is Red Mountain Weight Loss has full strength semaglutide for half the price of Ozempic. It's called Revolex. And unlike Ozempic, Revolex eliminates side effects so that there's no stomach pain or nausea, just weight loss. And Revolex is a tablet, not a shot, so you can skip the weekly doctor visits. Lose up to 15 pounds a month with no shots, no side effects, just results for half the price.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Mr. Bohal. I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Dr. Benz, do you have representation here?
I do.
Who is that?
Alex Snyder, Quarles and Brady.
Thank you very much, Mr. Snyder. I appreciate it. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Fantastic. Dr. Benz, would you or Mr. Snyder like to speak on this matter first?
Sure. Good morning, members of the board. I've been practicing osteopathic medicine in Arizona for over 30 years. In the year 2001, I received board certification in obesity medicine, and I have dedicated my practice to this discipline for the past 25 years. My primary focus has always been the safety and ethical care of my patients. I would never intentionally do anything to harm or mislead any patient. In 2022, the landscape of obesity medicine changed drastically due to the approval of the GLP-1 medication semaglutide. Patients were no longer interested in the traditional tools of obesity medicine, such as calorie-restricted diets, meal replacements, time-restricted eating, or anorectic medications. The results from the GLP-1 medications were very promising, and many patients were good candidates for this medication. I noticed in my practice that many of my patients were either uncomfortable giving themselves injections or also had GI side effects to the semaglutide injections. For this reason, I developed a compounded medication using sublingual semaglutide and the gastric peptide decapentapeptide. I named the medication Revolex and began to use it in my patients. Based on both clinical experience and patient-reported outcomes, we observed a significantly improved tolerability and compliance with the program. After several months of successfully using this medication, we decided to develop a marketing campaign to introduce the medication to new patients. This brings us to the complaint filed by someone in Oklahoma who was not a patient, as I have never treated any patients in Oklahoma. This person, however, took issue with the radio spot and felt like it was misleading by stating that the compound had no side effects. I quickly pulled the radio copy to review it. This radio ad was written by a new marketing team, not the one that I use in Arizona, where none of these same references are used in our radio advertising. I believe their intention was to claim that Revolex had fewer side effects as experienced in our patient population. I understand how this statement could be confusing. This was not my intent, and I do take responsibility for ensuring that all messaging more clearly reflects the variability of the patient experience and aligns with regulatory expectations. I immediately had the spot taken off the air and have reviewed all marketing language to remove any absolute claims and ensure clear disclosure regarding compounded medications. I also want to clarify that I have never represented that the compound itself is FDA approved. References to FDA approval were specific to the semaglutide as an active ingredient. That being understood, I see how these statements, particularly in a condensed format, could create confusion. I have since taken steps to ensure that all materials clearly distinguish between FDA approved medications and compounded formulations. I am truly grateful that there were no patient-reported incidents, and I do remain committed to practicing medicine safely, ethically, and transparently.
Thank you very much, Dr. Benz. I appreciate that. Mr. Snyder, do you have a prepared statement you'd like to say before we get started, or would you like to wait?
No, I would just like to add just a little bit onto Dr. Benz's statement there. As the board will see in their file, the radio advertisements from Arizona were, in fact, subpoenaed as well. And none of these advertisements were found to make claims that the medication had no side effects or that the medication prescribed is FDA approved, as the was brought up as the issue for the Oklahoma advertisements. And that these are all referencing a weight loss treatment program, and that in reality, when the patients are enrolled in that program, they can rely upon website information on Dr. Benz's website that reference side effects. They also receive a patient advisory letter and a minimum of 2 patient consults once they're enrolled in the program, and then there is an informed consent process as well. These are all detailed in our response that we submitted originally in January of 2024 for the board's record as well. But other than that, we are open for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Snyder. I appreciate it. I'd like to open the floor to the board for questions for Dr. Benz. Does anybody have any questions? Dr. Chapin, please.
Hi, Dr. Benz. Thank you for coming today and talking to us. Just had some questions on background. You said you completed a board-certified obesity medicine, or your board-certified in obesity medicine since 2001. Can you just tell me, what is your residency in, your primary residency?
My primary residency is in family practice, board-certified in family practice. And then in 2001, I went through the process with the ABOM, American Society of Bariatric Medicine, to receive board certification.
Okay. And where did you do your training in family medicine? I wasn't able to locate.
Dallas Family.
Okay. Okay. And have you maintained your board certification in family medicine then?
I have
as
not.
Well. Okay. So you were board certified in family medicine from until 2001, or?
No, I think it was 2017. I would have to correctly look, but I believe that's correct.
Gotcha. Okay. And then you do 100% obesity medicine now currently, correct?
I do.
Okay. The peptide, the decapentapeptide, that what is, can you tell me a little bit more about what that is?
That is a compound that is commonly called BPC and is a peptide that is used often for patients that have gastric complaints, ulcers, stomach upset, and can be effective, trophic to the GI tract and help with nausea and symptoms related to GI distress.
And what is it typically? It's not FDA approved, is that correct?
It at the time I was using it, it was on the compounding list. Since that, they have removed it from the allowable ingredients to be compounded with, so I am no longer using it.
Okay. But it is not FDA approved, correct?
It is not.
Okay. And so what was it typically used for before you compounded it with the semaglutide?
So it typically is used for gastric complaints, ulcers, esophagitis, nausea, and then it's also used quite frequently in musculoskeletal problems. Tendon repair are some of the most common reasons that it's used.
So off-label use of a compounded medication that you've used in the past before you compounded it with the semaglutide, so.
Correct.
Okay, so you've used that. So you used that compound for quite some time, and then decided to combine it with the semaglutide. Was the medication that you had previously used that you're no longer using? Is that
no,
correct?
Let me clarify. I didn't use it prior to adding it to this compound.
Okay, so you didn't have experience with it using it for gastric complaints in your practice prior.
Yes, yeah, the experience came when we added it to the medication, to the semaglutide.
And so how did you come up with to use it, to add it to the medication to?
I have a compounding pharmacist that I've worked with on previous compounds, and we kind of read through the research, and we did some trials with our employees, with our patients, and had good clinical experience by using it in our own employees and patients.
Before you compounded it with the semaglutide or with the semaglutide?
With the semaglutide.
Gotcha. Okay. So prior to that, no real information as far as personal information, just what was used as a non-FDA approved medication for a variety of different things by the compounding pharmacist. Typically, I assume is it typically used by naturopaths, or who typically would have used this prior?
I believe prior to being removed from the compounding list, a lot of physicians used it for GI complaints, nausea, tendon, muscle injuries.
Okay, but not FDA approved and not regulated. Is correct?
It was used off.
Okay.
Not FDA.
Okay. Okay. So as far as the side effect profile of it, your side effect profile that you were advertising with no side effects with the semaglutide with this medication, that was more anecdotal from when you started compounding it, not there wasn't any background of this molecule prior. Is that
there is some research to BPC that certainly I observed and read, but most of it was trying it in myself, trying it in staff, and then once we had probably good results with that, then we offered it to our patients.
Okay, and advertising that it didn't have side effects with your anecdotal evidence of using it in yourself and your patients. Is that
so
accurate?
Yes and no. The advertisement that was aired in Oklahoma that said that was not a typical advertisement, and that is not what we were using. That never was seen in any of our Arizona advertisements. I practice in Arizona, not Oklahoma. As I said before, we had used a different marketing team, and I believe that they overstated the facts and really did embellish it. And as I said, as soon as I found out about that, I did remove that ad, and that particular marketing person is no longer working with me.
Okay. And what about the ad that Mr. Bohal read earlier? Is that an ad that's still being?
No. So that was the ad that was heard by somebody in Oklahoma. As I said, I don't practice in Oklahoma. I've never seen any patients in Oklahoma. The board subpoenaed all the ads that are used in Arizona, and that language is not present in those ads.
Okay. Do you have a what ad are you currently utilizing though? The one on your website or where would I find the current ad that you're using?
I think they were subpoenaed. The board has them. They are a part of Dr. Pra's report.
Okay. I'll let Mr. Bohal clarify that in just a minute. And so currently, are you still using that compound in your clinics or something different?
I am not using that.
What are you currently using FDA-approved semaglutide or
We are. Something different? At the time that I was using that, there was no sublingual oral formula. Now, Wegovy does have an oral formula that is superior. And because the FDA took BPC off the allowable compounding list, I'm no longer able to use that.
Okay. And then that's been since when?
At least over a year.
Okay. And just one other question. What side effects did you, you said you didn't notice any side effects when you had it with your patients. About how many patients did you have on that medication?
I would only be guessing. I don't have an accurate figure, but I would probably say it's somewhere between 300 and 400. But once again, I am guessing at that figure.
Okay, and none of them are on it currently, correct?
I'm no longer prescribing.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Chapin. Go ahead, Dr. Rosenberg. Thank you.
Good morning, Dr. Benz. I just want to be clear. Are we talking about BCP-157?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're talking about. And do you know the majority of the reported side effects in the literature?
Well, one of the things it can do is promote angiogenesis, new blood flow, and so that's why it's used oftentimes for musculoskeletal injuries. But once again, it's also a gastric peptide, and so that's really why I was using it, for the benefits in the GI tract.
So when I read about BCP-157, I thought it was interesting the majority of the side effects that are reported in literature are GI side effects, nausea, diarrhea, constipation. Going back to what you were talking about with Dr. Chapin, you mentioned that before giving it to your patients, you tried it yourself, you tried it with your staff. Was this a sanctioned study with, you know, an NIH number and published data?
No, this was just to be used for my patients, something that I created to be used within my practice. I don't have the resources to do an NIH study. This is not something that I plan to ever have FDA approved. It was just something that I felt was going to be helpful to my patients and to those that used it. I never had any complaints. I never had any problems from any of the patients. They saw results, and so it was more of an observational study within my practice.
And when you were studying it in your staff, did you have informed consent from your staff?
Yes.
I think that's all my questions. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Those were appropriate questions. Thank you very much, Dr. Rosenberg. Any other questions from the board? I'd also like to hear from our public members as far as public opinion with advertising. Go ahead, Ms. Michelle.
I guess I did have a couple of questions. They're about advertising, but a little less about the eliminating side effects or no side effects. I saw in most of the ads, it talks about the product is ready to ship right away or ready in stock. In your attorney's response, you talk a lot about how every patient receives your consultation plus consultation with a pharmacist. So how does that happen if the medications are shipped?
Well, they are shipped according to compounding laws. They have to be patient-specific, shipped directly from the pharmacy. But that's only done after the patient has a consultation with myself or one of my other medical providers, and they have had an informed consent. They have reviewed all their options, and we have made the determination that it's an appropriate medication for them.
So it's not quite so clear in your attorney's response. It sounded to me like they receive a pharmacist's consultation, so perhaps that was just a little unclear on my part.
Well, they do. Anytime there's a compounded medication, the pharmacist sends a very detailed list about the medication, and the pharmacist's phone number is on there and available for consultation, and oftentimes patients do call and speak with the pharmacist.
Okay. Okay, I think that was my only question.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pichelle. Mr. Goodman, can I ask your opinion on this case?
Yeah, Dr. Benz, it went under the name Revolex, was it?
Correct.
You haven't treated anybody in Oklahoma, but why was it airing in Oklahoma? I assume they don't air these ads for free.
They do not. The practice does have two locations in Dallas, and I'm assuming that there was some overlap in the market.
Did your practice treat people in Oklahoma then?
No.
All right, thank you. The other, I guess the thing that came to mind for me was, I feel like I've heard this exact thing on the radio here, where I was left, whether it said this or not, I was left with the impression there will be no side effects, right? This is a magic new version of semaglutide where it won't hurt or feel bad and I'll feel good. And I know that you're saying that wasn't, you know, part of the messaging and everything, but it seemed to me as a public member, as a lay person, the main purpose of that ad was, or two things, you can get it cheaper, and it's superior in every way because there are no side effects. Not this nuanced version of, you know, certain side effects are reduced or minimalized, and it wasn't couched in this narrow way. It was quite broad. And I feel like I've heard that commercial for years. I don't listen to the radio much anymore, but I think I've heard it in the last couple of months, some version of that left me with that same impression that I could take this and I'd feel great. So I assume you guys aren't doing that anymore. Sounds like you're not putting that messaging out there, but I guess what is the response to a layperson like me who's left with that impression, whether intentional or not? Does that seem like the correct marketing if that's not in fact true?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, and I do see and take responsibility for how that could be misleading. I do want to acknowledge that in a 30-second radio spot, it is difficult always to provide the context to things, so I think that is a challenge. As I said before, these messages are not consistent with what we're doing in Arizona. The message in Oklahoma was kind of a one-off. And as I said, I did make sure to take that down. But I do want to assure you that there is no patient that is going to get this medication just because they heard a radio ad. That would prompt them to call, to schedule an appointment, to have an exam by a physician, to review medical history, to have an informed consent, to know what their options are, whether they take the medication or they do another program or they do nothing at all. So although I understand that confusion and I do take responsibility for that, I do want you to know that no patient would ever receive that.
Go ahead, Dr. Ben, sorry.
No patient would ever receive that just based on a radio commercial that they heard. I mean, we don't practice, I don't know what you want to call it, typical telemedicine, or you can't just go to the website and buy it. I mean, these are prescription items that have to be prescribed, by a physician.
Thank you, doctor. This just has me thinking of prior cases that we've seen where there's been misleading marketing. And the thing that comes back to mind for me is, again, as just a normal member of the public, when I hear this commercial, I'm filled with hope, right? Like, oh, there's this promise of this thing. Whoever that is talking right now, yes, we can hear you, but you can mute yourself, please. There's this promise that's made in that 30-second clip that, whether intentional or not, is it fills everybody listening with hope that there will be this thing. And it, even though there's more nuance once they walk in the door, they've already scheduled that appointment, reached out to you, taken the time out of their day to come do this thing based on just the hope that they got from that messaging. And that's a very powerful thing in medicine, right? We all want the cure. We want, you know, snake oil salesmen have been around forever. And if after they welcome them in the tent, they say, hey, here are all the precautions, the person's already come in the tent because they heard the snake oil salesman's ad, right? And they're already hooked. Now all those nuances don't matter, right? They're not hearing that. They're hearing the initial impression and the hope that they felt when they first heard it. And I think you're doing the right things here. It sounds like you're trying to help people. You're trying to correct the messaging, and you're not trying to mislead. But I still am not happy with that. I'm not comfortable with that sort of, it's only 30 seconds, so I'm going to fill people with 30 seconds of hope, and then I'll correct that later. I feel like it should be, like, I don't know, more neutral. And that sucks for you from a marketing perspective, but from a layperson's perspective, I don't want you filling other people with hope and then crushing that when they get there, but relying on the fact that they're already there and they're going to proceed, right? How many people come through the door after hearing it on the radio, hear the nuance, and then turn around?
Well, I don't have a number on that, but I will tell you that one of the things that I have always done as a bariatric physician for over 25 years is try to instill hope in my patients, because obesity is something that is very difficult and very emotional. So I don't have a problem with trying to instill hope in patients. And I do say that it's very difficult in a 30-second commercial to convey that hope. And sometimes perhaps we have overstated it, but it's never been with the intent to mislead or harm anybody. And anyone that does come into the office location, like I said, would meet our staff, would learn more about our programs. We have other programs that they can do if they don't want to do that particular program. As I said, they are put through a body composition, blood work, an exam. And most people, when they come, they're excited. They get to see a body composition. They get to see a physician. They get to meet with the physician. So I understand what you're saying about false hope, but I really don't feel many patients feel like that by the time they come to the office. I mean, as I said, this is my specialty. I didn't just start doing this because GLP-1s came on the market. In fact, GLP-1s have been the worst thing for my practice. Prior to that, patients wanted to come in. They wanted to be seen. They wanted your expertise. And things are a little bit more difficult these days, but I am certainly trying to be that physician that does give them hope. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry if you feel like that was wrong, but that is not my intent.
Thank you, Dr. Bentz. I believe you. Maybe I'd suggest just taking out a 45-second ad and having 15 seconds of, but here's what you need to know.
Yeah, it's difficult. If I had my way about it, I wouldn't do social media. I wouldn't do advertising. I wouldn't do any of it. I like the old days when patients just came to see us because they got a referral from a friend. I really wish those days were still here. But the reality is they're not. I love what I do. This has really been my life's purpose. My practice, my patients mean everything to me. But if I don't have any patients coming through the door, I can't practice. So there's a fine line between that. I realize that. But I hope you understand that if any line I cross, it's only because I do want to help patients and I do want to continue to see patients. It is my passion.
One more question then. Do you listen to or do you screen every ad that goes out before it goes out?
So I try to. I listen to all the ad campaigns, but there is, there's social media, there's digital prints, there's radio, there is a lot. And I've always tried to review the campaigns, but I can assure you from this point forward, I will not let any public-facing document get out without my full review of it.
And good, because at some point in this conversation or later in this meeting, Dr. Maiden's going to tell somebody, hey, just because it was an MA doesn't mean that you get the shirk of responsibility for making sure the notes are correct, right? It's still your responsibility.
Oh, I know that, and I'm not shirking that. I know.
And same thing, just as with charting, just as with billing, same with marketing, it's your name, your license. You're the one here, right? Not the marketing person.
That's why I didn't bring them.
I'm glad you're at least on notice of this process.
Yes, thank you.
You are correct, Mr. Goodman. ARS 1854-16 on advertising. We are responsible for it, also as well as so many other things. Dr. Walker, you had a question or a statement?
When time is appropriate, I would like to make a motion to move to executive session.
Time for legal advice. Go right ahead.
I would like to make that motion, Dr. Maida.
I'll second, Dr. Chapin.
Thank you very much. Any opposed? All in favor? Indicate with an aye.
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 Thank you very much. Go for it, Mr. Bohol.
Hold on, you should receive a notice here.
Thank you, sir. Mm-hmm. And everybody else will be back shortly. Dr. Nadel, we heard you earlier. We'll be getting to you a little bit farther down the agenda, and we'll call on you at that time.
Thank you. Also, I apologize if I interrupted earlier. I just couldn't hear, and I thought you guys were calling me. I got confused.
Yes.
Looks like we're good, Mr. Bohal. Did we get everybody out?
I'm just waiting for Miss Bichelle. There we go. You have your quorum.
Perfect. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Do we have any other questions for Dr. Benz? If not, Dr. Benz and Mr. Snyder, do you have any other closing statements?
I do not.
I do not.
You both spoke very well. I appreciate that. Do I have a motion on the floor from the board?
Make a motion, Dr. Like to make a motion for a non-disciplinary letter of concern citing ARS 32-1854, Section 6, engaging in the practice of medicine below the community standard, Section 16, advertising in a misleading manner, Section 19, any conduct or practice contrary to recognized standards of ethics and of the practice of osteopathic medicine, and Section 39, any conduct or practice that endangers patients or may reasonably be expected to do so.
Thank you. I have a motion on the floor. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
We have a second. I think Mr. Goodman beat it by a hair there. Is there further discussion on this matter? If not, are there any who disapprove of this motion? Please indicate with an A. All in favor of the motion, please indicate with an aye.
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 Did you get everybody, Mr. Bohal?
I believe we did.
Perfect. The motion carries. I appreciate your time very much and being prepared, Mr. Snyder and Dr. Benz. And we do appreciate the practice and the patients you serve. If you have any other questions, obviously, about this motion and implications, please reach out to Mr. Bohal and staff. They'll be available. Thank you for being here in Arizona.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Bohal, where would you like to move to next?
If we could actually move to item 7A, we do have a proposed consent agreement signed by Dr. Schwartz that I would like to present in lieu of the investigative hearings that are currently scheduled.
I would appreciate that. Please go ahead.
Thank you. And I believe Mr. Carey is present. Thank you. So I'll provide a brief summary. On or about May 5th, 2024, respondent self-reported to the board that the disciplinary action had been taken on his licenses in the state of Missouri and the state of Kansas. Based on the self-report, the board initiated an investigation. The board found that the state of Kansas placed the respondent's license on indefinite suspension for violating the Kansas Healing Arts Act, until as such time he provides the legally requested information pursuant to the request made by the board. In April of 2019, during the course of investigative matter, the Kansas board requested the respondent to provide copies of all contracted agreements for the disposal of biohazardous medical waste dating back to 2014. The state of Missouri issued a public reprimand to the respondent in a consent agreement dated January 23rd, 2024, and the reprimand was based on the disciplinary action taken by the Kansas board. On or about February 24th, 2026, the board initiated case DO-250165A after receiving another self-report that the state of Michigan took a disciplinary action against his license based on prior actions. The state of Michigan limited the license, restricting his ability to practice until he provides the documentation requested by the Kansas board. On or about June 25th, 2025, the board received a report from National Practitioner Data Bank noting that the state of New York took a disciplinary action against respondent's license as a result of the prior actions. The state of New York and respondent entered into a consent agreement that precluded the respondent from practicing medicine in New York and from reactivating his license at any time. The order would be for an administrative warning, as well as to pay for the cost of the investigation. And it should be noted that the respondent has not submitted a renewal for his license, and it is currently suspended, expired.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bohal. Mm-hmm. Does the board have any questions of Mr. Bohol or Mr. Carey? Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Carey. Would you like to speak first? I apologize.
Just very briefly, members of the board, this is a reciprocal discipline case. There's no direct nexus to Arizona, and this consent agreement, it's the product of Ms. Castor and I spending a lot of time back and forth trying to craft an outcome that respects the fact that this costs money for you to have to litigate or even look at reciprocal cases, even when there's no nexus to your board. Documenting as necessary, but he has, if you go to his data bank, this has been reported and re-reported. So we think this is a solution that allows the board to indicate that it has looked at it, but also not unfairly penalizing him with some additional consequences, as this case has been fully investigated by other agencies.
Thank you, Mr. Carey. I appreciate it. Do any board members have any questions of Mr. Bohol or Mr. Carey? If not, we can entertain a motion. This is a an item we can accept or decline.
I make a motion to accept the consent agreement as presented.
Thank you, Ms. Bichelle. Do we have a second?
I'll second, Dr. Walker.
Thank you, Dr. Walker. I appreciate it. Is there any further discussion? Are there
disciplinary, so you need a roll call. And would the motion include vacating the investigative hearings?
I would take that as a amendment to the motion if you do, Ms. Pichelle.
Yes, that's acceptable.
And Dr. Walker, do you accept that?
Yes.
Perfect. We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? If not, Mr. Bohol, you can move to a roll call.
Okay. Dr. Rosenberg.
Aye.
Dr. Cunningham is absent. Ms. Pichelle?
Aye.
Dr. Walker?
Aye.
Mr. Goodman?
Aye.
Dr. Shippon?
Yes.
Dr. Maidham?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it and appreciate your time, Mr. Carey.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
You also. And where are we going to next?
We'd like to go to 6A. This is case number DO-260086A. Betsy Larder. I believe Dr. Larder is present as well as her attorney. And I'll have Ms. Castro provide the summary.
Well, go ahead, Ms. Castro.
Okay, Dr. Larder holds an LOQ compact license in Arizona issued May of 2025, and she has applied for a full license in September of 2025. On the application for full licensure, Dr. Larder answered no to having ever been arrested for, charged with, or convicted of any felony or misdemeanor. During the processing of the application, board staff became aware that Dr. Larder provided false or misleading information, as she was arrested in February of 2012 for failure to appear a felony. When asked, Dr. Larder stated that she was arrested while at a hotel when police ran her license plate in the parking lot. Dr. Larder further stated that she received a parking ticket in 2011 and she had failed to pay the fine or appear in court because of the rigorous schedule of medical school, escalating the matter to a warrant for her arrest. Dr. Larder holds a license in the state of Colorado, Indiana, Kentucky, Ohio, and Wyoming and has no disciplinary action. The board has been provided a list of potential violations to review, and some of those include ARS 32-1854-9, procuring, renewing, or attempting to procure or renew a license to practice osteopathic medicine by fraud or misrepresentation, and ARS 32-1854-19, committing any conduct or practice contrary to the recognized standards of ethics in the osteopathic medical profession.
That's perfect, Ms. Castro. I appreciate it. And Dr. Larder, good morning. Thank you for being here. I'm sorry you have to be here. Is your representation Ms. DePena?
Good morning. It's Rachel DePena. Yes, I'm present as well. Thank you.
Darn it. Okay, thank you very much.
It's a tricky one.
It is. DePena. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Would one of you like to speak to this event or both?
Yes, thank you. I'll just introduce Dr. Larder. She will provide the board with a brief statement and her background. We also just recently did provide the board with a supplemental response and some information on May 19th. I hope everybody has had an opportunity to receive and review that. Primarily, as I think Dr. Larder can explain, the response on her application stemmed from a misunderstanding of what she was required to report and answer. And I don't believe that she's ever been aware that the failure to appear was considered a felony. So I think in her mind, the context had to do with the underlying citation, which was the class 2 petty offense. But I will let her take it from here, introduce herself, and talk with you all. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. DePinio. I appreciate it. Dr. Larder, could you tell us a little bit about yourself? And feel free to speak to this event.
Yeah, my name is Dr. Betsy Larder. I will tell you, I of course have a prepared statement explaining things, but I will tell you hearing the word felony right now coming from you guys is the first time I've ever heard that. I don't get my own background checks and I don't know why that specific word is there. People in the legal system may understand it more than I do. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to fully and completely address the board's concern about my application for licensure in Arizona. As Ms. DePina mentioned, we just recently submitted a letter which provides supplemental information for the board's concerns. I hope you've had an opportunity to receive that and review that. My letter provided additional information about my background and my training as a hospitalist and a neurocritical care intensivist. I have never had a board complaint raised against me in the past. I have never had any disciplinary action taken against me. My medical license has always remained in good standing, and I provide safe and appropriate medical care to all my patients. I spent the last 11 years practicing in Ohio. I started working in Arizona in September with an Arizona medical license via the Interstate Compact. Once I realized I wanted to stay in Arizona, I applied for a primary Arizona medical license in preparation to make it my state of primary licensure. My understanding is that the board's primary concern is that I answered no to a declaration's question on the application regarding whether or not I had ever been arrested for, charged with, or convicted of a felony or misdemeanor. I believe that answer to be accurate and true when I answered the question on my application. And I have believed it to be true today, as I will explain, as all my paperwork says class 2 petty offense. And hearing the word felony right in this minute has been the first time I've ever heard that. When the board requested information about a prior unpaid parking ticket, which escalated into a warrant for failure to appear when it remained unpaid, I promptly and completely disclosed all the information about the situation, and I will address that. I'm not aware of any patient care concerns before the board at this time. In 2011, I was charged with a class 2 petty offense in Colorado after I went to a dog park and did not have the necessary parking permit displayed on my car. I was new to the area, having just moved there after gaining a last-minute acceptance into medical school from the wait list, and I was just about to start medical school. I did not know I needed a parking permit, and I received a ticket. The start of medical school was a stressful and hectic time. I completely forgot about the ticket, and I forgot to pay it. If I had remembered the ticket, I would have paid the fine. I take responsibility for forgetting to pay that fine. At the start of medical school, I did not have a reliable mailing address, so I did not receive any reminders or follow-up information about the ticket or the unpaid fine, nor did I know about a court date regarding the ticket. I did not know that when I did not pay the fine or appear for the court that I was not aware of, that the issue was escalated to a warrant for failure to appear in court. Many months later, in the spring of 2012, I was starting a ski trip with friends and staying in a hotel. A police officer apparently ran my vehicle license plate and saw the outstanding issue from 2011, and I was taken to the police station. I was not placed in a cell, and after clarifying the matter, I was able to leave within the hour. I later spoke with the district attorney, who only wanted me to pay a $50 fine in order for the charges to be dismissed. I promptly made that payment on March 7, 2012, and the charges were dismissed the following day. I did not intend to lie, hide, or misrepresent this information in my license application. I did not believe that it rose to the level of a misdemeanor or felony, as it was a class 2 petty offense, as listed on my paperwork. Once the board became aware of this ticket and requested information about the issue, I promptly sent a letter to the board explaining the situation, along with all of the supporting documentation. I did not withhold or hide any information. I take responsibility for any miscommunication and apologize if it appeared that I was not forthcoming in my application. That was never my intent. I am an honest and forthright person. I am a good physician, and I provide good care. I do not believe that I've engaged in any unprofessional conduct, behavior concerns, or behavior concerns outlined by the board's letter. Almost done, 1 second. I believe
you're
that I would
Dr.
provide...
Dr. Heiner, take your time.
Believe that I would be able to provide beneficial medical care and treatment to the people of Arizona, and I'm respectfully asking the board dismiss any complaints or ethical concerns about me, and that the board would approve or reconsider for approval my licensing application. I appreciate your time and am happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Dr. Larder. I appreciate that, and I'm very sorry it's difficult to present yourself in this venue, but you did a good job. Do we have any questions for Dr. Larder? If I don't have any questions, I would take a motion.
I do have one question.
Please, go ahead, Mr. Bennett.
Dr. Larder, thank you for all of that. I completely understand how disconcerting this must be. My only question for you is, on your next application, how will you answer it?
That is a great question because I'm confused hearing you guys say the word felony. Well, it was a parking ticket. I'm so confused. But since you're saying it, you must have a background check that says the word felony. That's new information to me. So if there's another application that says misdemeanor or felony, I'll check yes. I have, based on this conversation right now, I have answered these questions a million times and every place phrases it different. So if it just said, you know, whatever might come up on your background check, they all phrase it very differently. To my knowledge, misdemeanor or felony, I always say no to that because I have a prior thing on my record in records and I have it all documented. It's come up a couple of times. No one has ever told me I'm asking you about this because of a felony. I think it's come up like 2 times. I have multiple different licenses, multiple hospital privileges. And if anyone ever says, hey, something came up, what's going on? And I say, this is what I know, and then they have never questioned again. My understanding in this minute why you guys have been confused is because you're reading the word felony and I'm saying no. I didn't know that that's what the background check says. 11 years into practice in multiple states into practice. I'm so confused as to why it says that. This was truly a parking ticket, but yes, right now, from this point forward, I have to answer yes, which is fine. I have the documentation. But I don't. My documentation says Class 2 petty offense. I like to answer honestly. I don't want to make people review things they don't need to be reviewing. But of course, if you guys tell me the background check says felony, I guess I have to check yes. I'm confused. That seems aggressive. From the legal system.
Yeah, give me just a moment to draw a little clarity on that for you, Dr. Larder. Mr. Bohall, would you like to give us a little clarity on that and what applying doctors can do when they are entering this process?
Absolutely. The Arizona Board, Dr. Larder, you are correct that different states and different places word the question differently. Our question specifically states if you were charged, arrested, or convicted, which in this case that appears to be what happened, and it doesn't limit it just to misdemeanor or felonies. I would have to go back and look specifically at the background check, so I don't want to address that part of it for you because I think you need to confirm with your legal counsel about the felony situation, if that's available on the record and what your options are to address that. We just strongly encourage when applicants come before the board or submit applications, if there's any question to that of how they should answer, we encourage them to contact board staff and discuss the situation before submitting the application. And the intent behind it is so that the board has a full picture of the licensee and their history in determining whether or not they're able to practice in the state of Arizona. I hope that provides some clarity that the application is just designed for getting the information to the board.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bohall. I appreciate it.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, and Rachel, perhaps you can explain to Dr. Lauder, I believe the felony comes into play because of the failure to appear. Is that correct?
Are you asking me if that's
right? Yes.
I'm still haven't seen any documentation indicating that the warrant in Colorado would have been considered a felony. Again, I was only brought on to the matter and retained last week. We did ask for postponement of this matter, so I was a bit on my heels in trying to work with Dr. Larder. But I think, again, if it would be considered a felony, we would certainly have to follow up, I think, with the courts in Colorado to verify that. I don't know that that could have been done in less than a week, which is the timeline I had. But certainly would encourage Dr. Larder to investigate that and, discuss the application process in the future. Again, I think this all just stemmed from a misunderstanding of reading the board's question and her perception of what it was the board was looking for. But again, I think once this board indicated to her that it had a question about that particular issue, she provided all of the information right away. So certainly I think this is a good indication of how to address this and change application questions going forward, a painful learning lesson, but one I think everybody can see Dr. Larder has taken very seriously.
I certainly agree with that, ma'am. Ms. Castro, do you have any further information on the felony statement?
Yes, and I do want to be very careful. So I will say in general, what the background check reflects is what the charge is, and it does not necessarily translate into what the conviction or the resolution was. Those are separate. And so the category of felony listed on a background check may not have resulted in a conviction of a felony. And I want to be very careful about how we speak about that. And then I will just read the actual language of the question as we ask it. We ask, have you ever been arrested for, charged with, or convicted of any felony or any misdemeanor? You must answer yes, even if the offense occurred outside of Arizona, the case has not yet been adjudicated, you completed a diversion program, you received a suspended sentence or probation, the convictions were dismissed or set aside, your sentence was commuted, the records were expunged, your civil rights were restored, or you received a pardon. So we would ask that you disclose anything, and it is up the board's discretion on how that is reviewed. But the reason that it is coming before the board at this point is because it was just answered no to, and we have to fully investigate that and be very transparent with the board.
That's perfect, Ms. Castro. Thank you very much. That definitely also helps with clarity. I appreciate that. Any other questions for the doctor? Otherwise, I would like to make a motion to grant Dr. Larder a full license in Arizona.
I will second that, Dr. Walker.
And I got a second from Dr. Walker. Are you too slow, Mr. Goodman? Is there any further discussion? Any opposed? All in favor, please indicate with an aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Did you get your votes there, Mr. Boho?
I do.
Dr. Larder, thank you very much for being here. We definitely want you, or at least I do, as a neurocritical care doctor in Arizona. Can you tell me what your planned practice is?
I'm currently practicing at Flagstaff Medical as a hospitalist. Mm-hmm. While I am grateful for my time training as neurocritical care, COVID did a number on my mental health, I'm just taking simple days as a hospitalist for now.
Well, I won't call being a hospitalist simple. Appreciate that job. That's wonderful, and thank you very much for being in front of us today. And thank you very much. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Dipina. Did I say it right that time?
Closer. It's just Dipina.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Bohal, where would you like to move to next, unless the board needs a biological break? Why don't you continue on then?
Perfect. If we can go to 6B, case number DO260087. This is Dylan Kassenbrock. I believe Dr. Kassenbrock is present, and I'll have Ms. Castro provide a summary.
Please go ahead.
Hey, Dr. Kassenbrock holds an active postgraduate training permit in Arizona. It was issued June 2022 and expires June of 2026. The doctor has applied for a full license. On the application, Dr. Kassenbrock answered no to having ever been arrested for, charged with, or convicted of a felony or misdemeanor. During the processing of the application, board staff became aware that Dr. Kassenbrock provided false or misleading information on his applications with the board, as he was arrested in September 2009 in Ventura, California, and charged with two counts of DUI. The arresting documents from the sheriff's office confirmed the charges. The case was ultimately dismissed by the Superior Court and records were destroyed in 2024. Board staff notes that Dr. Kassenbrock submitted five applications to the board and failed to disclose the arrest on each of them. Dr. Kassenbrock stated that he did not disclose the arrest because the record had been expunged. Board staff notes that the order of dismissal received from the applicant specifically states, quote, if this order is granted under the provisions of Penal Code Sections 12034, the defendant is required to disclose the above conviction in response to any direct question contained in any questionnaire or application for public office or for licensure by any state. The board has been provided a list of possible violations to consider, and among them include ARS 32-1854-9, procuring, renewing, or attempting to procure or renew a license to practice osteopathic medicine by fraud or misrepresentation, ARS 32-1854-15, knowingly making any false or fraudulent statement, written or oral, in connection with the practice of medicine or when applying for or renewing privileges at a healthcare institute or healthcare program, 1854-19, committing any conduct or practice contrary to the recognized standards of ethics of the osteopathic medical profession, 1854-39, committing any conduct or practice that endangers the patient's or the public's health or may reasonably be expected to do so, and 1854-40, committing any conduct or practice that impairs the licensee's ability to safely and skillfully practice medicine or that may reasonably be expected to do so.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Ms. Castro. Dr. Kassenbach, thank you very much for being here. And do you have representation today?
I do not have representation. I have my program director here on my behalf. But yeah, no representation.
And is that Ms. Pruski?
Yeah, Dr. Pruski.
Thanks, Dr. Pruski. Oh, I'm so sorry. Thank you very much.
No problem.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much for being here, ma'am. I appreciate it. And before you start, I'd just like to let it known to the board at some point we can move to executive session for personal and confidential questions and potential legal advice, but let's get started first before we consider that, if that's okay. Would you like to tell us a little bit about these events, Dr. Kassenbrock?
Yeah, and first off, thank you for taking the time to see me and hear my case and everything. So when I was 19 years old, 17 years ago, pretty new to college, went to a college party, drank alcohol, had no business driving, of course, but got a call from a friend who needed a ride. So I made the stupid decision to drive. I went, picked him up, and was pulled over. The officer asked if I'd been drinking, and I said, yes, I had. And then I got my DUI. So that's the first part, you know, in regards to my charges. As for, you know, omitting this from my applications. When I first applied to medical school, before I got this off of my record, I applied, I think, two times before. I listed that I did have a misdemeanor because it hadn't been off my record yet. Didn't get many interviews, certainly didn't get into medical school. So I took the measures to get it expunged and dismissed from my records, filed that paperwork myself, and then next application cycle, I was able to check no, that I didn't have, you know, any misdemeanor because it's off my record. The AMCAS contacted me, noticing the discrepancy year to year, and asked me to provide some proof of this. I sent them the paper that I sent you guys. It's form 1203.4. And they said, okay, you are good. You do not need to include this in your application. So from there on, I would not include this. Anytime, you know, I got that question, I checked no. And I completely failed to realize that this is a different entity. This is a different ball game with the licensing committee. I absolutely have to disclose. And I failed to do that. And I want to apologize for that. It's not something that I will ever do again. If I could go back in time, I would absolutely, you know, check yes. And I will, if I'm ever presented that opportunity in the future. I mean, I obviously didn't want anyone to know about this because I'm ashamed of it. Even though it happened, you know, what was it, 17, 19 years ago. It's just it's a scarlet letter, and I am completely ashamed by it. After this whole debacle happened, you know, debacle of my own creating, I might add, I eventually, you know, told my program director, attendings, and have been honest with everybody, and I was surprised by the support and compassion that they showed. The fact that Dr. Parisi is here to kind of help with the character statement is amazing. So, yeah, I just want to say I know that as a physician, we want our physicians, we need our physicians to be honest, and this does not represent who I am, how I practice medicine, how I care for patients, and it will never happen again.
I appreciate that, Dr. Kassenbrock. Just as a personal recommendation, I'd recommend being careful with being ashamed of things. Some of the worst, or if I can use the word stupidest, decisions we make are ones that we learn lessons from and make us stronger. So these can actually be things that you shouldn't be proud of the event, but you should be proud of the fact that you learned something and you've moved on. I think that's fantastic. Sorry for soapbox there, everybody. Does anybody have any questions for Dr. Kassenbrock? If not, I'd like to, I'm sorry, make sure I gave everybody a chance there. If not, I'd like to make a motion to move to executive session for personal and confidential questions and potential legal advice.
Second, Dr. Walker.
Thank you. I have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Any opposed? All in favor, indicate with an aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Give us just a moment. We're going to move you over to an executive session area, Dr. Kassenbrock. I appreciate you being here, Dr. Parisi, but this is probably inappropriate for you if you can give us just a minute.
believe you have your quorum.
I think I do. Thank you very much, Mr. Bohol. I appreciate it. Does anybody have any further questions for Dr. Kessenbrock or for Dr. Pruski, for that matter? Dr. Pruski, do you have a statement?
I do. I prepared a statement to read today. May I read it?
Please do. I would like to hear it. Thank you.
So my name is Dr. April Pruski, and I'm the Residency Program Director of Honor Health PM&R Residency Program, which is the only PM&R residency in all of Arizona. I am also the Chief of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation at the Phoenix VA. I prepared a written statement regarding not only my personal interaction with Dr. Kassenbrock, but also the Associate Program Director, Dr. Catherine Fall, who is unable to be present due to patient care responsibilities. We have had the opportunity to work closely with Dr. Kassenbrock during his residency training and can confidently state that he is a highly respected and valued member of our program. In fact, he is a chief resident in our program, a title not easily given out. Throughout his time here, he has consistently demonstrated exemplary behavior, professionalism, integrity, and sound clinical judgment. There have been no issues or concerns regarding his conduct, performance, or interactions with colleagues, staff, or patients. There has been no suspicion of any behavioral, ethical, or professional issues during his tenure in our institution. Residents consistently describe him as approachable, supportive, and an excellent teacher. He is well regarded by his peers for his willingness to assist others and for fostering a collaborative learning environment. Nursing staff frequently come to him with concerns and questions without reservation, reflecting the trust and confidence they place in his judgment and demeanor. It is important to recognize that the matter currently under review pertains to an expunged incident that occurred when he was 19. Based on our direct experience working with him, this historical matter is not a reflection of his current character, professionalism, or fitness to practice medicine. His conduct and reputation within our institution has been exemplary. We fully support Dr. Kassenbrock and believe he possesses the professionalism, maturity, and character expected of a physician. We are hopeful that in today's assessment, the board will not define him by a mistake, but rather by the physician we have come to know, trust, and respect, one in whose hands we would confidently place the care of our own family members. Thank you for allowing me to speak on behalf of Dr. Dylan Kassenbrock today. In full confidence, we fully support him having an unrestricted license in the great state of Arizona.
Thank you very much, Dr. Pruski. I really appreciate it. I don't think I've ever had a residency director here speaking for one of our doctors, so thank you for your time. If nothing else, I will take a motion.
The motion?
Go ahead, Dr. Chapin. Thank you.
Appreciate you coming here and appreciate your candor and everything, and definitely appreciate your comments, Dr. Pruski. That was great. In these cases, we do get these cases a lot, and they are concerning. And I think Ms. Castro did read I will give a motion, sorry, at the end of this. And Ms. Castro did make the comments about, you know, what type of violations are involved here. And we do take filling out applications seriously and prior. And I think you recognize that and you realize that, and we appreciate your concern and your willingness to practice here. And with that, I'd like to make a motion to grant an unrestricted license.
Thank you, Dr. Chapin. Do I have a second?
Second.
Mr. Goodman, thank you, sir. Is there any further discussion? Are there any opposed to this motion? All in favor, please indicate with an aye. Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are you good, Mr. Bohol? Perfect. Thank you very much, Dr. Kassenbrock. I appreciate your time. And Dr. Pruski, I appreciate your time and what you both do. That being said, Mr. Bohol, could we take a break? Would you like 10 minutes or more?
10 minutes would be perfect.
Okay. If we could take 10 minutes to those on the call, if you can give us 10 minutes, and we'll be right back.
I believe you have your quorum of board members and legal counsel present, so we can resume.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Are we moving on to item C next, or where are we going?
That's correct. Item 6C, which is case number DO-260090A, Nicole Nadell. I believe Dr. Nadell is present.
Perfect. And are you discussing this case, or is that Ms. Castro?
I'll have Ms. Castro present.
Perfect. Go ahead, ma'am. Thank you.
Okay. Dr. Nadell applied for licensure March 13, 2025. After submitting conflicting documentation with multiple CVs with false or misleading information, the application was ultimately withdrawn for failure to complete the application within the time frame allowed. Dr. Nadell again applied for licensure January of 2026. On the application, Dr. Nadell disclosed that a malpractice payment was made on her behalf in April of 2024. Dr. Nadell stated the case was confidential and settled out of court for a nuanced value due to economic and other reasons, and there was no admission of liability. Documentation received regarding the medical malpractice action notes that patient TN received filler injections between her cheeks and eyelids directly under both eyes. It further notes that Dr. Nadell failed to obtain informed consent prior to performing the filler injections. Dr. Nadell improperly and inadvertently struck the needle into TN's right eye and injected the filler into the patient's eye during the microdroplet injection procedure. Board staff notes that Dr. Nadell is board certified in emergency medicine. Dr. Nadell states that the South Carolina board in which where this occurred did not complete an investigation into the malpractice case. Dr. Nadell is licensed in over 20 states and has no disciplinary action. The board has been provided a list of potential violations to review. Among them is ARS 32-1854-6, engaging in the practice of medicine in a manner that harms or may harm a patient or that the board determines falls below the community standard. 32-1854-19, committing any conduct or practice contrary to recognized standards of ethics of the osteopathic medical profession, and 1854-39, committing any conduct or practice that endangers a patient's or the public's health or may reasonably be expected to do so.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Ms. Castro. I appreciate it. Dr. Nadell, would you like to tell us a little bit about your practice and about this case? Oh, you're on mute, Dr. Nadell.
Can you hear me now?
Absolutely perfect. Thank you. Go ahead, please.
So my name is Dr. Nicole Nadell. I have been a board-certified emergency medicine physician for 20-some-odd years, and I maintain my board certification. I was doing locums emergency medicine for about 15 years, and about 8 years ago, I, due to, just typical physician burnout, which is very common in emergency medicine, I started doing practicing aesthetic medicine. In order to practice aesthetic medicine, I did 2 years of very intensive coursework, both in person, online. I read multiple books. I did multiple video lectures, and I opened up my first medical school about 8 or 9 years ago. I continued to practice emergency medicine during that time. So kind of just straddling the two, and then eventually, now it's about 8 or 9 years later, I no longer practice emergency medicine. I am the owner of 6 medical spas, and I am very well established in the aesthetic medicine community as being, one of the, this is all I do. It's not a side job. This is first and foremost what I do every single day. So, there were several things that Ms. Castro brought up, and I don't want to miss any of them, but I didn't write them down because I thought this meeting was about something else. So I don't want to miss anything that she mentioned. So if I do, could somebody please just bring it up? I think the first thing that she mentioned was applying with I thought this whole hearing was about the year on my CV. So I'm a little bit confused why the case is being brought. I'm just very, I'm taken off guard. I didn't know this was about like so many different items. I thought that this hearing was about the year on my CV, which I'd like to address first and foremost. So,
Could I stop you for just a moment there? Not a problem. No, I want you to have a clear understanding, of course, of why we're here today. This is a licensure application that we're hearing right now. Mr. Bohol, could you tell a little bit about this point and the point of the investigation?
Yes. So the notice was sent to Dr. Nadell that the board was going to review the licensure application. So Dr. Nadell is applying for a full license in the state of Arizona. The board is reviewing conduct involving ARS 32-18-54, 6-19, 39-40, and 46, as well as 32-18-22-A6, which is has not engaged in any conduct that occurred in this state, would be considered unprofessional conduct, or if the applicant has engaged in unprofessional conduct, is rehabilitated from the underlying conduct. So this was specifically about the medical malpractice that was settled in South Carolina. So that's what the board is reviewing.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that. So, okay, I can talk about that. That's not a problem. I thought it was about the CV, the year on the CV.
No. So Dr. Nadell, it's a licensure application that is flagged by the board to requiring review in front of the board. This is a hearing process, an application process. So if you're not prepared to address the board on this matter, we can table this.
I can absolutely address the board. I was confused. That's all. I was just verbalizing my confusion. But that's totally fine. I can address the board.
I just want to be fair to you. If you're comfortable.
Fine. It's not a problem. It's not a problem at all. No. I want to make sure I didn't miss anything. That's all. So this is just about case PN.
Is that the correct case, Ms. Castro?
That is the correct malpractice, yes. Correct.
Okay, yes, no problem, yes. My patient, and I don't have her specific dates in front of me, but I saw her several years ago, and I injected under-eye filler. It's something that I've been doing in my practice for 8 years. I have never, ever had any kind of complication other than the typical complications of swelling and bruising. And the patient received under-eye filler injections by me. And afterwards, she was complaining of some stinging in her eye. So I flushed out her eye. This can happen when we use numbing cream, and the numbing cream can get in the eye. So this has happened like maybe 10 to 20 times in the past, you know, just a little numbing cream gets in the eye. And so I flushed out her eye and she felt totally fine. And then I think later on that day, she had texted me saying that she was complaining of eye issues. So I said, well, this could be, you know, something serious with your eye. So I said, you have to go to the ER immediately. Also, Ms. Castro mentioned that she didn't have informed consent. Of course, every single one of my patients has informed consent, including her. She did have informed consent. So I called the MESC Swarm Institute, which is our emergency ophthalmologist. And they said that she would have to be. So I sent her to MUSC ER while she was there. The ophthalmologist was never called, so I said, you need to go back to the ER. I'm so sorry, but I am talking with the ophthalmologist, and I said, you need to be evaluated by the ophthalmologist. So I made her go back to the ER a second time. The ophthalmologist evaluated her there and said that she has, like, an early cataracts, which could be caused from trauma to the eye. So the cataracts was fixable with surgical procedure, and then she
followed up with a lawsuit to me saying that I injected filler into her eye. The case was settled. Here's the thing. Like, I know that under eye filler seems like it's so close to the eye, it could be injected into the eye. But the way that I inject filler is extraordinarily safe. I actually push back on the eye, and I inject just on the orbital bone, which is about 1 to 2 centimeters away from the eye. So I actually do it extraordinarily safe. I follow a protocol that I was taught to inject under eye filler using a microdroplet technique. And again, I've never had any other complication other than with her. So I still don't know to this point, to this time, what exactly occurred, because I follow very, very strict protocols that I do with every single one of my patients, and I don't know how I could possibly have injected filler in a visual part of her eye. I have patients looking up at the ceiling, so actually the visual portion of their eye is so far from where I'm injecting that I don't know how it's possible. So the lawsuit was settled for I'm not allowed to disclose the amount. I think I did send it to you guys, actually, because I was told that I have to. But in the court agreement, I am not allowed to disclose the number. But that's pretty much it. That incident has not occurred again. And I continue to practice the same under eye fillers that I've done for 8 years, literally without any sort of issue whatsoever. So I cannot speak to exactly what happened. She insists that I injected her eye with filler. The thing is, when I inject, I go down on bone. So until I hit bone, I don't inject filler. I would never inject filler, even because you can't inject it superficially. It has to be down on bone for it to be safe. So for me to inject it into her globe, it just seems so preposterous on three levels. But she did have a complication. It was after my under eye filler, and I just don't have a very good explanation other than that.
Oh, you answered the question in front of us initially. I appreciate it, Dr. Nadell. Does the board have any questions for Dr. Nadell?
If somebody is talking, I can't hear.
I don't know if that's the speaker on your side. I assume nobody else is having audio problems.
Now I can hear. Sorry, now I can hear.
Okay.
For some reason, my Bluetooth switched off. I'm not sure.
You're okay. Questions from the board, please. If I don't have any questions, I will take a motion. Dr. Chapin, I know you have questions. Sorry to call you out. You're on mute.
I'm just reviewing my questions. Okay.
Sorry, I've known you long enough, ma'am.
Yep. Okay. I just the only question I had, you explained the suit. There was a letter from a board certified ophthalmologist in the records, who also does aesthetics, I believe, who said that, who did comment on cataract development being accelerated by injection specifically of the dermal filler. Do you have any comments on that, Dr. Nadell?
Well, I have the case, of course, reviewed by an ophthalmologist, and of course I've read that as well. And I don't see how that could be possible, because I literally push on the globe of the eye, and then I inject the heat. Like, there is a safety zone that I follow, so I don't see how that could be possible. But of course I read the same thing as you, and I don't have a better explanation other than that. And as I said, I continue to practice the exact same way that I was taught, and I've never ever had a complication. So I read exactly what you've read, and I'm sorry, I don't have a better answer other than to say I don't know how that's possible, because the way I practice is extraordinarily safe.
Okay. And Dr. Depp, could you, your practice, you're currently, are you a solo provider in your current practice, or?
So I have four mid-level, so NPs, PAs, but in terms of physician, I'm the only physician in my practice, yes.
Okay. And can you discuss a little bit about your supervision of the PAs and NPs in your practice?
Yes. So I actually hand train every single PA and NP that works for me. They have to act as my medical assistant. I call aesthetic medicine the Wild West of medicine because there's a lot of kind of badness out there, poor injector technique, poor. I've been to those courses. I've seen them. I've seen bad work. So it took me a long time, several years, to sift through a lot of different courses and find people that I thought were really the best in the field, and I learned from them. So I make sure every single one of my PAs and NPs, they don't get trained by anybody else but me. And everybody learns exactly the technique that I've learned. So, and I oversee them. So again, several months, they are my medical assistants. Then I watch them inject talk for about a month. And then we do, model calls for like fillers. And, they've spent 2 months watching me and learning from me. And then they spend, it's about 20 patients that they have to have before the South Carolina board allows them to practice that procedure. I'm supervising, I just want to be clear, I'm supervising one PA in Texas and three mid-levels in South Carolina.
Okay, all simultaneously, I assume. Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're supervising them remotely. If they're what is the protocol if there's a complication?
The protocol if there's a complication, I have trained them on dealing with complications. So that is part of my training. So the girl in Texas, we just opened Texas, so she's been flying to South Carolina for her training, but she can't inject in South Carolina. So I'm going to be flying down to Texas so that we could do the patients that she needs. So we're still kind of in the process of that. But I train all my PAs and NPs. I train them on all complications as well.
And what is your intention in Arizona? I assume it's to open additional med spas or?
No, it's not actually. So no? We have another business. We are going to be doing weight loss. It's going to be I'm partnering up with he's currently running Curex, which is like an online telemedicine platform for allergies. And we're going to be partnering together and opening up GLP, like a weight loss, virtual weight loss.
Okay. So your intention is not to practice live in Arizona, but to practice from a telemedicine perspective with
only
the...
a telemedicine perspective. Yes. Yes, exactly.
Okay. Thank you. I'll open it up to the board for other
Thank you, Dr. Chabon. So considerations for the board, the doctor's board certified in emergency medicine, doctors practicing in plastics with 2 years of online and in-person training. She's held to the standards of the practice that she is doing at the time, in this case, plastics. That being said, we only have
Excuse me, I don't want to interrupt, but that's
Hold on 1 second, Dr. Nadel. Dr. Nadel, that's okay. In this case, we only have the one malpractice case. That's from 2022. A malpractice case was 2024, event in 2022. So it's up to this board to decide if this is a practice pattern or problem that would preclude the doctor's application to the state of Arizona. Any further questions to Dr. Nadel? And Dr. Nadel, you had a further statement. I apologize for interrupting you before.
I'm sorry. I interrupted. I apologize for that. But you were saying surgery, field of aesthetic medicine does not fall necessarily under plastic surgery or even necessarily dermatology. It's a field that anybody is able to practice.
You're 100% correct. Thank you. I appreciate that. Sorry, I'm emergency medicine too, and you my comfort level. So yes.
Yeah, I hear you. No, it took a lot of training for me to get to where I am.
Nope, absolutely. I understand that. You are correct. Thank you very much for mentioning that. Do I have further questions, a motion on the floor, or a request to move to executive session?
I'll make a motion to move to executive session for legal advice.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Do I have a second? Well,
I'll second.
You got it? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Goodman. Any further discussion? Any opposed? All in favor, indicate with an aye. Aye. Give us one moment, Dr. Nadel. We'll be right back.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You have your quorum.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Mr. Bohol. I appreciate it. Are there any further questions for Dr. Nadel, or do I have a motion?
I'll make a motion, Dr. Chapin. I'd like to make a motion for unrestricted license.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
And a second from Dr. Rosenberg. Thank you very much, sir. Is there any further discussion? Are there any opposed? If not, all in favor, please indicate with an aye.
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 Thank you very much. I appreciate your time, Dr. Nadel. Thank you very much for being in front of us. And Mr. Bohol, I think you can move on.
Yes. Item 6D.
Thank you. So much.
Thank you. Case number DO260089, Janine Pernoud. And I believe Dr. Pernoud's attorney is present.
Yes, good morning.
Thank you very much. And is that pronounced correctly, Pernoud or Pernoud?
It's actually Pernoud, but that's fine.
Pernoud, oh. Pernoud, thank you.
No problem. And it's Ms. Savolani?
Yes, Savolani.
Okay, I was a little close. I appreciate it. Would you like to tell us a little bit about this case, Dr. Pernoud, or Ms. Swalit? I'm not even going to try. I apologize.
Yes, no, Dr. Pernoud has a statement prepared today. I would like to emphasize that her intent was never to mislead the board. I will let her speak to this occurrence, and we are happy to answer any questions following her statement.
Thank you, ma'am.
Hello. First of all, I wanted to thank you for allowing me to appear. This is actually my first time interacting with a board. The only interaction I've ever had.
Doctor, do you have the ability to turn on your camera?
I'm not sure. It's on.
That's okay. You put yourself on mute there.
I'm sorry. I'm on my phone and hold on, a thing came up saying.
You got it. That's perfect.
Can you see me?
Absolutely. Good job. I really appreciate it.
Oh, perfect. I'm sorry.
No trouble at all.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'll start over. First of all, I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to come and talk about this today. You know, actually, it's been very educational. I've never really interacted with a licensing board except just to renew my license every year. So this has been educational, and I appreciate your all service. So thank you. So first of all, I just wanted to say that I apologize for the miscommunication, the misunderstanding. I definitely should have included this on the online application. I misunderstood as the incident happened when I was a resident, and I read it as had you had any issues while in practice, which I have not had any issues in Kentucky. This issue was during my chief residency in April. I was tasked with observing or helping a family practice intern place a central line. She made multiple attempts that weren't successful. I made an attempt that was unsuccessful, so I aborted the procedure. But unfortunately, the patient suffered a tear to the subclavian vein and actually died as a result of it. It was a terrible thing that happened. I took full responsibility. I'm to this day unsure if my attempt caused the issue or what caused the issue, but I took full responsibility. I felt horrible for it. I was not involved in the lawsuit. I didn't find out about it until I was already practicing in Kentucky. The family sued. I had a 5, maybe 10 minute phone call with a lawyer. I explained to him what happened. He asked me what I thought they should do, and I said I thought they should settle. I was never even deposed. The family or the hospital did settle, I again did not disclose it on the online application because I thought it, as I said, I thought it was while in practice. But then when I doing the written application, I thought about it and I thought I should definitely disclose it. Again, it happened 20 years ago. The incident itself isn't hazy at all, but the whole legal process and the lawsuit is definitely, hazy. I apologize for that. Once the board wanted information, I did start the process of trying to find out, about the actual case. I emailed, the Stark County, court system, because that's where it happened, and they had no record of my name, and being involved in a lawsuit. I also, emailed Columbus, because Columbus, Ohio, which is where it occurred, it occurred in Stark County, Ohio, but Columbus is the capital, so I thought, well, like, maybe they would have it, and they didn't have it. I don't know how long these records are held. He said it was 20 years ago when this happened. So I finally learned I could do a self-query. So I performed a self-query on myself, and that's where I was able to find that the incident did occur in April of 2006, and that the settlement, was performed. I again apologize. I've been practicing in a rural, underserved area in Kentucky for 20 years. I've had no issues. I've never gotten in trouble with the board. I've never had any disciplinary actions. In January, I accepted a position at the Indian Healthcare Center located in Winslow, Arizona. I accepted it, and that's why I'm trying to get a license. I've gone through their whole credentialing process, and I've passed. I'm able to practice there. I've also in the process of undergoing the credentialing process for the Little Colorado Medical Center, which is located in Winslow, where I would be operating. And they're just waiting for my Arizona license to grant me privileges there. Again, I was not trying to hide anything. It was 20 years ago when I was a resident, and I, to this day, I've been placing ports and central lines for 20 years, and I think about that incident, and there is no minor procedure, and it's definitely affected me since that issue happened. As a result, I've learned from this process. I will always disclose it. I will err on the side of over disclosure from now on. I again really regret this, and I respectfully request that you approve my license to practice.
Thank you very much, Doctor. I appreciate that. And I apologize if I can take a moment, Ms. Castro or Mr. Bohol. I think I bulldozed right past your presentation. Would you like to speak on this, Ms. Castro?
If you'd like, I can read it into the record.
Would you please?
Sure. Dr. Perinaud has applied for licensure in February of 2026. On the application, a doctor failed to properly disclose a malpractice payment made on her behalf in the state of Ohio in 2007. This was during her last year of residency. The National Practitioner Data Bank reports that the patient's IV had infiltrated and central line placement was ordered. It further states Dr. Perinaud made attempts to insert the line but was unsuccessful, and the vein was damaged during the attempts to insert the central line, contributing to the patient's death 90 minutes later. The doctor stated that the case had not been investigated or reviewed by any state board. Staff confirmed that the state of Ohio was not aware of the malpractice payment at the time. The doctor's license expired in Ohio June 30th of 2006. The doctor is licensed to practice in Kentucky. It was issued September of 2006, remains active, and has no disciplinary action. The board has been provided a list of statute violations to consider. Among them includes ARS 32-1854-6, engaging in the practice of medicine in a manner that harms or may harm a patient or that the board determines falls below the community standard, 1854-9, procuring, renewing, or attempting to procure or renew a license to practice osteopathic medicine by fraud or misrepresentation,
and 1854-19 committing any conduct or practice contrary to the recognized standards of ethics of the osteopathic medical profession.
Thank you very much, Ms. Castro. My apologies. Dr. Pernod, if you had anything you needed to amend to your statement, then you're certainly welcome to do so.
No, just that, I did try to correct the error. When I filled out the written application, I did include it. But again, I made a mistake and I apologize. And I take full responsibility for that. I misunderstood. And I apologize for that.
I appreciate people who take responsibility for their actions. Do we have any questions from the board? And if not, do I have a motion?
Make a motion. Like to make a motion to grant an unrestricted license.
Thank you. I will take a second.
Second.
Thank you, Dr. Rosenberg. Is there any further discussion? Are there any opposed? All in favor, please indicate with an aye.
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 Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And thank you both for being here in front of the board. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Mr. Bohol, can we take a 5 or 10 minute break?
Yes.
Thank you very much. We'll be back shortly.
I believe you have your quorum, sir.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Mr. Bohol. I appreciate it. Where are we moving to next?
If we could go to item 7B, this is case number DO2400110A, Arthur DeLuigi. Dr. DeLuigi is requesting termination of his probation. And I can provide some information in public session, but it may be appropriate to step into executive session.
Please, whatever information you should present in public session, and we can make a motion as appropriate.
Thank you. On February 16th, 2024, the board received a self-report from Arthur DeLuigi that he had been arrested and charged with disorderly conduct and assault following an incident that occurred on February 8th, 2024 in Scottsdale, Arizona. Respondent requested early termination of the probation at the board's November 2025 meeting. The board expressed concern that respondent had only been monitored for 1 year at that point and denied the request for early termination, but instructed the respondent to request again in 6 months, and the board would consider the request at that time. And that concludes everything I believe is appropriate for public session.
Perfect. I appreciate it. I'd like to make a motion to move to executive session for personal and confidential information, as well as potentially legal advice.
Second.
A second for Mr. Goodman. Any further discussion? Any opposed? All in favor, please indicate with an aye. Aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much. Give us just one moment, Dr. DeLuigi, and thank you for being here.
Great. Thank you.
And you have your quorum, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mohall. I'd like to make a motion that the current consent agreement be converted as discussed in executive session. Do I have a second?
A second, Dr. Sugar.
I have a second from Dr. Chapon. Is there any further discussion? Mr. Mohall, do you need a roll call for that?
Yes, please.
Go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Goodman.
Aye.
Dr. Rosenberg.
Aye.
Ms. Pichelle?
Aye.
Dr. Walker?
Aye.
Dr. Chabon?
Yes.
Dr. Maynham?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Obviously, Dr. DiLuigi, please reach out to board staff for further discussion on that matter, and we appreciate you being here.
Okay, great. So my next step would be to reach out to Mr. Mohall and Ms. Castro?
Yes, you got it.
All right, wonderful. Thank you so very much. I greatly appreciate your time and willingness to hear from me today. And thank you for everything you do for our community.
Thank you, Dr. DiLuigi.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Mohall, what are we doing next?
If we could move to item number 9, and I'll try to be brief on this. We had a typographical error that was inserted into last month's agenda where the applications were listed under consent agreements. They were properly noticed for the meeting. However, there was that error in the agenda. So just to be fully transparent, to comply with open meeting law, we're requesting that the board make a motion to ratify any of the licensing and application decisions from the March 28th, 2026 meeting. We don't have a concern about any of the decisions or, you know, wanting to overturn them. We just want to ensure that with proper notice, these are addressed.
Ms. Galvin, do you have any concerns?
I do not.
I would like to make a motion to move forward with that ratification.
Second.
Is there any further discussion? Any opposed? All in favor, please indicate with an aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Mr. Mohall.
And then moving on to item 10, which is report from board members. I had two notes for one for the FSMB annual meeting, which Dr. Chapon and Dr. Maynham attended, and two was the ethics presentations, both to the students and interns, one at Midwestern, one at AT Still, and then one for residents of Midwestern University. So perfect. I turn that over to you, Dr. Maynham.
I think it was very interesting and educational to have a little bit of time to spend with the medical students to talk about the board. It's something that I wish I had gotten when I was a medical student. I understand some of you have had that opportunity, but it really helped me to spend some time with the medical students, and hopefully they'll have a better understanding of what we do. As far as FSMB, I think it was a very enlightening and educational opportunity. It was certainly a lot of time in meetings, but the chance to meet with the other board members from so many states, so many attendants. I don't remember the numbers, but we were in the 300 or 400 attendees range or something like that, if I remember correctly, to have that much communication to try to keep our eyes open to what we're doing and to learn about other boards and how they deal with situations, I think is very important. Dr. Chabon, did you have anything further?
I just wanted to congratulate Justin on the award he won at the FSMB. And he can talk about that a little more.
Oh, yes.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yes, I did win the Doug Scherf Award from the Administrators in Medicine. So this is Administrators in Medicine is the national group for the Osteopathic and Medical Board Directors. And the Doug Scherf Award is actually a former Arizona Medical Board director that they created the award for, but it's for innovation or, really striving and performing well as the position of executive director. I was actually nominated by Stephanie Luca and Sandra DuPontis. Stephanie is from Ohio and Sandra is from North Dakota, as well as I received letters from board staff recommending me. And I was very, very grateful for not only the nomination, but the award. And I'm glad for that position.
And that means a lot to us to stand out amongst such a large community of people who do so much. Besides the fact you even chaired one of the committees, too. So I would definitely appreciate your time doing that. Thank you very much, Mr. Bohol.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And feel free to move on in the agenda, Mr. Bohol.
Okay. Next item is the executive director's report. I'll be brief. We have completed 70 investigations this fiscal year so far. I do note that we've had a 44% increase in new cases since last reported in December. So staff is working through those cases. We are trying to complete cases within under 180 days. We've not seen a significant increase in our time frames with some of the changes that we've made through the sunset audit process, addressing our policies and procedures. I will say that we have requested additional staff from the legislature to address these increases so that we can close cases in under 180 days, process timely, and really be responsive to our licensee base. As far as financials, so far we've received over 105% of our expected revenue, so we have made back what we expend annually. We have gotten about 90% of the way through the fiscal year, and we've spent 82%, so we're under what we're appropriated. That'll get close to 100% as we hit June 30th, but I do not expect us to go over that appropriation. The legislature has recessed until next Tuesday, in which they believe that they have struck a budget deal with the governor. They plan to introduce that next week, and so we shall see what is in store for us for the budget. But with that, that concludes my executive director's report.
Perfect. I appreciate it. Thank you very much, Mr. Bohol. Any questions for Mr. Bohol or other staff? If not, I think the next item is item 11, unless I missed anything.
That's correct.
Do I have any motion for adjournment?
So move.
Okay, Dr. Walk. I'll second that. Seeing none opposed, if all are in favor, I think we can make a motion to adjourn. I really appreciate everybody's time. Thank you very much for the hard work that you're doing. I know it takes a lot out of your, not just day, but month with the preparation. So thank you for what you do, everybody.